Hello everyone, welcome back to our studio. My name is Lino Ferra. Today's program is the second part of a three-part series on employment for individuals with varied abilities. In our first program, we discussed a broad range of terms, definitions, and general observations and opinions related to employment of persons with varied abilities, which includes individuals with developmental disabilities. Based on last month's episode, it is obvious that a person with varied abilities needs to have more than just a living arrangement. We learned that in order to live in an inclusive community, one must be active and have purpose. On today's program, you'll meet Carolyn McDougall and Dr. Jennifer Croson, who will share information on the valuable work being done on employment as it relates to individuals with varied abilities. Carolyn McDougall is an occupational therapist at Holland Bloorview, Toronto, Canada. Ms. McDougall manages a variety of employment programs at Holland Bloorview and is the manager, Employment Pathways. She is also the Ontario Coordinator of Project Search and the Business Liaison for Project Search Toronto at Holland Bloorview. Dr. Jennifer Croson is a registered social worker and is the Diversity and Inclusion Specialist at the Ontario Disability Employment Network, often referred to as ODIN. Hello, Ms. McDougall and Dr. Croson. Welcome to our show. First of all, may I call you both by your first names?
Yes.
Great.
Absolutely, please.
Wonderful. I'm very excited to have you both on our show. I have researched so much about the work you both have done and continue to do in the area of employment as it relates to persons with varied abilities. So let's begin our program with a couple of questions to Carolyn first. Carolyn, I understand you helped establish a Project Search program in Toronto, Ontario in 2019. The Project Search model was developed at Cincinnati Children's Medical Center in 1996 and has since spread to 600 plus sites worldwide. Incredible, by the way. The model boasts a strong success rate. I believe it's about 75% of students secure quality employment within a year of graduation. Very impressive. My understanding is that Project Search Toronto is a school-to-work transition program for youth who have developmental or intellectual disabilities. The program takes place entirely at a workplace, right? Students prepare for employment through a combination of classroom instruction, hands-on training through three co-op rotations, and career exploration and individualized job development. So, my first question, can you talk to us about Project Search and the role of Holland Bloorview in facilitating the work experiences and internships during the training process?
Yes, great job, Lino, describing the Project Search model. And so I can say in Ontario, any Project Search location or what we call a site is operated by a school board, an employment agency, and a business. So programs did start in Halton and in Toronto in 2019. The Halton one is based at Halton Healthcare, with its partners, and the Toronto one is based at my hospital, Holland Bloorview. We're the host business, along with another partner, University Health Network, and our education partner, the Toronto District School Board, employment agency partner, Community Living Toronto, and with support of United Way, Greater Toronto. So there's actually now 11 other sites in Ontario, all based in different businesses. So the role of any host business is to coordinate the hands-on training that's geared to the local labor market demands. So each student has three experience placements of 10 weeks each over a year. That's at least 30 weeks and typically around 700 hours. To give you an example of the role that a business plays in facilitating these work experiences, we recently had a Toronto graduate hired as a patient transporter. And as some of the watchers and listeners may know, the job involves taking patients from one area of the hospital to another. So, for example, from an inpatient unit to the x-ray department, and the patient could be on a stretcher or in a wheelchair. So the person I'm speaking of trained first at Holland Bloorview in our daycare for 10 weeks and then in our on-site school. And they were learning about making their way around large buildings, safety of young people and patients in general, professional communication, equipment, sanitizing, that type of thing. And so for their final placement of 10 weeks, the individual moved to one of the downtown sites of a large hospital, University Health Network, and really trained in that specific role of patient transporter. In the end, she did such a good job. The first time there was an opportunity, she was hired. So there's sort of an example of how those experiences really connect to create quality employment.
Wow, that's incredible. That's wonderful stuff. So you're now the Ontario coordinator of Project Search, which includes working with all Ontario and Canadian sites on professional development, I believe quality improvement, awareness building, and policy development. Can you tell us a little bit about what is involved in on onboarding new Ontario and Canadian sites?
Sure. So when there's, as you mentioned in your introduction, Project Search did start in 1996 at Cincinnati Children's Hospital Medical Center. And the model quickly proved so effective that, as you said, it spread to many locations worldwide. There's actually 750 plus locations this year. And it is a licensed program. So the team at Cincinnati Children's provides tools and training whenever there's a new local community that wants to start. But they start that at the point that the local team has sort of really mobilized themselves. So it takes actually a fair amount of time, like from 9 months to a year, really, to build the partnership that's needed to make this program successful. So the connections between the educational organization, the employment agency, and the host business. So part of my role as the provincial and Canadian coordinator is to give information when people reach out, when they're interested, and to do outreach to new communities and help facilitate those kinds of connections so that the team as a whole gets to the stage of signing a license agreement and really beginning their formal training and journey to the launch. So I guess I could say for people watching and listening, if wanting to know more about Project Search, the website projectsearchcanada.org would be a good place to start, and feel free to get in touch with me.
Great. And I understand you started a work experience program for teenagers as well in 2007 at Holland Broadview that is operated as an employment pathway now, right?
Yes.
So, good. Why is early work experience? I know what it is, but why is early work experience important? And how do programs like this help?
Thanks. Yeah, I mean, I'm incredibly passionate about early work experience because experiences lead to skills, confidence, our self-awareness of the things that we like and are, and that we're good at, and what really helps us do our best at work. But unfortunately, young people with disabilities can really face many barriers in getting those kinds of early work experiences, starting from an early age, like chores around the house or at school and being part of extracurricular activities, babysitting, volunteering, let alone a summer job. So programs like the ones at Holland Broadview can be seen sort of as a launch pad. To explain how, I'll give you an example from a story that is posted on Holland Broadview's YouTube channel. People can find it as Ethan's story. Ethan is a young man. He communicates differently, so found that people didn't always see his strengths, and he really wanted support for getting started. So he volunteered with our hospital's summer youth at work program, got that sort of first work experience, and summarized for his future work and supervisors information about the strategies that help him to do his best at work. And they're really pretty simple things like clear instructions and regular feedback. And then he and his dad worked on a personal employment action plan with one of our coaches. And next we helped him to connect to his first paid summer job and supported him and his supervisors with on-the-job coaching. And after that, he got himself into a co-op program at his school for more experiences and got another summer job. So he's off to a great start, and just kind of an illustration of a little bit of support can really help that journey to get going.
That's great. And how old was he when he started? Like what mid-teens, 15 or?
People in general are sort of 16, sometimes as young as 14 and up to 17. Depends, kind of on when they feel like it's the right time to start.
Yeah, that's a great story, because I, as a parent of a young adult with special needs, I wrote in my book, The Waiting Game, at the, I called it the, post-21 era is almost like a tsunami, right? Because, if people don't have the life skills training and the that are specific to maybe some sort of occupation or some sort of job, understanding the environment, the landscape at that early age would be so much beneficial than waiting until you're post 21 and then you already, you know, you have all these other things happening. It's a lot of pressure. So I'm really glad to hear that there's been a shift over the years, and that the ideology and the way of thinking is being done by Project Search is really the way to go. Dr. Jennifer Croson, thank you for being so patient. Jennifer, please tell us about ODIN is and the business purpose of this organization.
Absolutely. So ODIN, which stands for the Ontario Disability Employment Network, is exactly as it sounds. It really is a network that exists in Ontario. It's a province-wide organization. We have members from in the south, from in the north, the east, and the west. And really the purpose of ODIN is to bring together businesses and employment service providers in ways that increase opportunities for job seekers who have a disability. So we don't work directly with job seekers as such. We more so work with those systems around job seekers in order to help increase the number of people who have a disability who are employed in Ontario. So we do this in many different ways. You know, we work with businesses to enhance their inclusion and diversity efforts, but with a focus on disability. So we do this by providing support, and training. And one of the trainings that we provide that is really popular is called the DACT training, which is the Disability and Awareness Confidence Training. And that is really about helping businesses see how and why employing people who have disabilities is actually a good business decision. We also work with employment service providers and educators in many different ways. You know, for example, we support increasing staff skills and competencies by providing training and connecting those organizations across the provinces, the province with businesses who are looking to hire people who have a disability. So since 2015, for example, you know, we've provided training to over 110 employment service provider organizations in Ontario, and that is about over 2,000 staff across the province. So quite a wide variety of work that we do.
That's great. So over the years, and I understand it, you're seeing more and more corporations, businesses in the private sector more receptive to hiring people with disabilities, or is there a trend now that
you're... Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think businesses are seeing that actually there's a large talent pool of people mm-hmm. who live with a disability who should and are employable, you know, and to not look at ways in which a business could hire a person who, like, why should disability be a barrier? And in fact, often it's not. You know, I mean, there's a whole lot of research that I could get into, but I'm sure your show has probably looked at that. You know, it's actually not the barrier that people think it is. So I think that's one of the clear messages that ODIN gives, and we like to support businesses in coming to understand that.
That's great. And Jennifer, you have an extensive background addressing diversity and inclusion. Can you take us through the work being done at ODIN as it relates to your role there as diversity and inclusion specialist?
My role at ODIN is actually quite specific. So the work that I do in ODIN is on what was in its infancy was known as the Youth Success Strategy, mm-hmm. and it's now the Canadian Youth Success Strategy. So I'll walk you through kind of how that has come to be.
Please do.
It also lends itself really nicely to a lot of the things that Carolyn has said to us in the first part of this podcast, because a lot of what she is saying is very similar to what I'm saying. So when I joined ODIN, which was in 2021, I did a piece of research for them. They were interested in looking at what were some of those barriers. You know, Carolyn mentioned barriers. What were some of those barriers and indeed opportunities that existed for youth who have developmental and or intellectual disabilities as they prepare for a future that could include meaningful employment. So in other words, what was getting in the way and what was perhaps actually a good thing and what was perhaps in, you know, a good factor for an individual to have. So we looked at the literature, we spoke with employment service providers in Ontario, including Holland, Bloorview, Manitoba, Quebec, and Ireland. And what we found really clearly was that youth who have developmental disabilities and intellectual disabilities were not being prepared for a future that includes employment in the same way that some of their peers without developmental disabilities were. So some of those reasons included the low expectations, quite frankly, that families and educators have for people who have developmental disabilities. So for like, it's as simple as, well, they're not going to work when they get older, so why would we think about preparing them? And that sounds rather crass, but that it's true. Like that's really one of the things that we found. So what that kind of then translated into is youth not being given those same access to things like volunteer experience. So we expect all students in Ontario to get their high school diploma, they have to do 40 hours of volunteer. But those youth who have developmental disabilities were not being asked to do the same because they weren't going to get that high school diploma. But then they're missing out on the opportunity and experience that they get
Absolutely.
From that volunteer experience. They weren't being given the same access to co-ops and summer jobs. And these are where fundamental and soft employment skills begin. You know, they also weren't being given the same opportunity to learn to read, to develop their literacy, and to develop their numeracy skills that some of their peers were. And all of these things are important when it comes to getting a job when you're not an adult. So from all of that, from that research, we developed workshops, and our workshops were really targeted at parents. They were targeted at caregivers, and they were targeted at educators. And what we were saying in those workshops is, look, we all need to raise our expectations about what is possible for a young person, for this young person's future. We need to start now. We need to start at home, like Carolyn was talking about, with chores, you know, with having those same expectations at school that we were having for the other children in the school. So we delivered that workshop to over 600 people across Ontario. And we then applied to the CASE, the Canadian Association for Supported Employment, to their Innovation Lab for more funding to take this show on the road, as I like to call it. And we were able to train organizations in British Columbia, Manitoba, and Nova Scotia on the delivery of this workshop to help raise those expectations that we all hold for young people who have developmental disabilities.
Wonderful.
It's an exciting project.
And that's music to my ears. This is great. This is a lot. As a parent of a young man with special needs, and like all parents are who watch our program, I think they'll like to hear, love to hear what you're doing and what you believe to be true. You also have a son with Down syndrome, right? In thinking of his experiences as he navigates his life in school, recreation, and the community at large, what drives you to create change, Jennifer?
Great question. I mean, advocacy, it's in my blood. You know, I mean, that's part of what social workers do. It's part of my training, you know, but when I take off that professional hat, I'm first and foremost a mother. And as you say, I'm a mother to three children, but my youngest son has Down syndrome. You know, his name's Owen. And, you know, what I like to tell people, especially when I do this workshop, is when I was even pregnant with Owen and I was told that he was going to have Down syndrome, I was told to lower my expectations. So in that moment, being, you know, a woman who is expecting a baby, I'm being told to lower my expectations for what his future is going to be. You know, I'm told that he might not go to school. He might not learn to read. He'll probably never have a job. He'll probably live with you for the rest of your life. You know, I'm sure you get the picture. You know, but I and my family, you know, has always really prioritized Owen's right to be present, his right to be included, you know, his right to be taught alongside his peers, and his right to be given choice and opportunities to develop what he's interested in and what he has the potential to become. You know, and when I say that, that's what we wish for all of our children, right? So why is it different for youth who have a developmental disability? And I really encourage parents, caregivers, educators to think the same way that for our young people who have developmental disabilities as we do for those who do not. You know, and I use an example. You know, you ask about, you know, how do I navigate this? You know, my son's in grade 5 right now. I know full well, I mean, I'm not good at math either, but I know that Owen does have an intellectual disability, which makes math more challenging for him. But that doesn't mean he can't be given the opportunity to do math at the same time his peers are doing math. It just might look different for Owen. Mm-hmm. And that is okay. That is okay, because that is inclusion for me. You know, I think that we really need to change and challenge the narrative that so often surrounds people who have developmental disabilities. And we all, you know, all of us must raise our expectations for what their future could look like.
I was starting to get emotional there because I really feel for that. It's so wonderful. But since our program is also viewed beyond our Halton and Hamilton communities to listeners across the internet, what can you suggest for an individual job seeker with varied abilities who wants to connect to employment, or a family who wants their child to get an early start? Carolyn, let's start with you, just to close off our program.
Sure. So my one idea is about learning about and really connecting with employment services at the right time and stage. I think Jennifer may touch on some of the earlier aspects, but, you know, regardless of region or jurisdiction, because there can be some societal barriers that that exist for job seekers with disabilities, typically there are publicly funded employment support services for employers and job seekers with disabilities, and so getting connected can be a helpful resource in the job search. I think it could start by connecting with a disability service organization in the local community to get the right referral. And in Ontario, people could connect with Employment Ontario, for example, to find an agency in their area.
Great. Jennifer, your comments to that same question?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with everything that Carolyn has said. And then, you know, if we peel that, you know, back a little bit earlier, you know, and as I mentioned in the research that I did and in the presentations that we do at Odin, it starts at home and it starts with those chores at home. It starts with having those high expectations at home for your young person who has a developmental disability, and creating opportunities for them to explore what they are interested in, and speaking to them about work at home. You know, how often were you asked when you were younger, what do you want to be when you grow up? Right? How often do we ask that question of a young person who has a developmental disability? Mm-hmm. The other thing is it's very true, you know, and the other thing is school. You know, we have most, more often than not, our children will probably have an IEP, an individual education plan, to guide, you know, their journey through school. Is one of those goals in their employment that we are thinking about, what skills does this young person need in a school environment that's going to help them to become employable when they transition from school? So just, I would empower and encourage parents to feel confident that these are conversations they should be having with their children in their schools.
And Carolyn and Jennifer, I always like to end my program by asking my guests, is there a final overarching message that you would like to leave our viewers? Jennifer first. How's that? Then Carolyn.
For me, it's always see the person first, not the disability. You know, find their strengths, because we all have strengths. And, you know, focus on what a person can do versus what they can't do. And so often when it comes to disability, we think about what they can't do. I'm asking you to think about what they can do. You know, and really, I want you to see this as an issue of human rights, because it is. It is a matter of human rights. People do have the right to work, and that includes people who have a disability. And I would leave that message with you today.
Beautiful. Carolyn?
Yeah, and for me, it would be jump right in and learn and talk about employment inclusion. Firstly, the benefits, because there are benefits for the individual living with a disability, for sure. And as we've been speaking about, for the employer, for the community, and for our society as a whole. So first the benefits, and then the how-tos. There are things you can learn and do. So I think some resources include, you can go to Holland Blurview's webpage and under advocacy and disability in the workplace. And then also Odin's webpage is a great resource. So that's odenetwork.com. And then just start by taking one step, and you'll be glad you did.
Okay, thank you. Carolyn and Jennifer, thank you very much for appearing as our guests today and sharing valuable information on a very important topic, employment for persons with disabilities. And I look forward to having you back on our show soon for some wonderful updates. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
I'm betting that when any of us meet a wonderful human being with varied abilities, chances are the first thing we do not ask is, where do you work, young man or young lady? Perhaps this will change soon. I'm certain every person who has tuned into today's program will agree that every person with a disability has a gift, and they can contribute and flourish once they are given the opportunity to enter the workforce. What we can do to affect change as a society is open up our hearts and minds to a multitude of opportunities, thus allowing willing candidates to learn the necessary life skills needed to enter the workforce and be an active member of our communities. I've witnessed persons with disabilities thrive and perform very well in various employment roles. They appear to be extremely happy in their employment role and interact well with their peers and customers. I believe that an employer who takes the initiative to effect change will never find a more loyal employee, and the return on their investment is that the company is seen by their customers as a business that cares for every member of the community. And there are multiple studies that support this statement. On our next program, we will continue with our series on unemployment for individuals with disabilities in our communities by learning of one example of how a particular social organization, United States of America, is moving the pendulum forward in the journey to ensure that all persons with disabilities have the opportunity to enter the workforce in a positive and inclusive manner. Be sure to tune in. If you missed any of our previous webcasts, not to worry. You can key in two words, Cribwith Talks, on YouTube. Watch all of our episodes on your TV Halton Cogeco's community channel, covering local news and productions in the Burlington and Oakville area. And now viewed on Cable 14 Hamilton, Ontario, available to Cogeco and Rogers subscribers in that area. Our program provides a platform to share your message with our viewers. If you have a social business, is affecting change and providing a valuable service to persons who are part of our vulnerable population and wish to talk about your social business, write to us at info@cribwithtalks.com. My name is Lino Farrell. Thank you for watching Cribwith Talks. Be well, stay safe.